The kid spread his hand and then began to blush. But his face turned pale when he saw my queen high flush.
I'm going to do a piece that I wrote celebrating James Booker as a New Orleans pianist, and it's entitled Dr. James.
How long, babe, how long? one ring. Which way did my baby go? How long? How long? Babe, how long? Train whistle blowing, and I cannot see no train. Not deep down in my heart, just like a achy pain. Get up on one of these tall mountains, call my baby back. How long? How long? Baby, how long? Now I'm gonna sing this time, darling. Time rolled around. I believe I've got to go.
live performance right there from Pine Top Perkins. Classic track, How Long. That's from a Shaughnessy record called Live at 85. Yes, celebrating his 85th birthday. There, Pine Top Perkins. Plus Henry Butler. He came to us from a Windham Hill release called New Orleans Inspiration. He introduced his own song entitled Dr. James there from Henry Butler. Check out Whiskey Before Breakfast. It's a fiddle tune and a radio show, not a prescription from your podiatrist. Tune into WRCT on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Whiskey Before Breakfast, Pittsburgh's most eclectic folk radio program. And stick around for an hour of bluegrass at 1 p.m. for the Black Diamond Show. Where else but on 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh and WRCT.org on the web. And whether you're a young pup or a seasoned hound, there's a class for every interest at Animal Friends University. At Animal Friends, you can take a class about or even for or with your pet. They offer summer camps for kids, cat massages classes, canine behavior training, and so much more. View their catalog online at thinkingoutsidethecage.org. Up next, we're going to hear from Roosevelt Sykes. From a Charlie release, came out 1977 on LP. This is called Music Is My Business. Here he is with the funky side. Yeah, Roosevelt Sykes here on the Deep Blues Hour.
This new death I says has got to go. Arms getting tired in my back and soul. We smelling tired, we on the funky side. Now the band is playing and the music's hot. Right, we're back giving everything you got. Band is playing and the music's hot now. Right, we're back giving everything you got. We smelling tired, we on the funky side. Well, I like to dance close. Me dead in eye, baby. Funny thing run up and down my spine. You can look so sly. Rock me in the morning, rock me late at night. Tell the whole world that you out of sight. Rock me in the morning, baby, rock me night. Tell the whole world that you out of sight. We are smelling tired. We on the funky side. Well, running up and down my spine. You can look so sly. Rock me in the morning, rock me late at night. Tell the whole world that you're out of sight. Rock me in the morning, baby, rock me at night. Tell the world that you're out of sight. We're smelling tired. We on the funky side. On the funky side.
Thank you. here thinking. And the thoughts make me feel so sad. I am sitting here thinking. And the thoughts make me feel so sad. I searched 11 long years for love. Yeah, search for something I already had. When I think of what the old folks say, I can't help but cry. When I think of what the old folks say, I can't help but cry. They have told me so often, you never miss your water till the well goes dry.
Music there from Junior Parker, recording for the Duke record label. That was Sitting and Thinking there from Junior Parker. Plus Homesick James gave us a nice instrumental entitled Homesick Shuffle from 1964 and his release Blues on the South Side of Chicago, of course. Homesick James right there. What we're going to hear next from Kerry Robinson, I promised this at the beginning of the hour, performing live on Maxwell Street. This is from a Studio IT and Rooster Blues promo disc, came out in 2000, entitled And This Is Free, a documentary soundtrack. So here she is with a fine backup band of random Chicago blues artists. This is Power to Live Right. Yes, Power to Live Right there from Kerry Robinson here on the Deep Blues Hour.
Power to talk right. be sure, in case you come in late, don't know what band you're listening at. You're listening to the Nighthawks. I'm Robert Nighthawk. I am the only Robert Nighthawk. I'm the man. That's not new.
I'm a mean old man to love you. ain't always real love and love. This is a real love, man. I don't stop sinning till I strike that wood burn sand. I got a reputation and they call me Billy Smith. I got a mean reputation and it call me Billy Smith. But when I saw the Billy, he had women holler, too blessed.
Well, there you have Blind Lemon Jefferson, one of the classic early blues artists. Recorded 1929. That was called Peach Orchard Mama. Yeah, nice untraced master release there from him, from Blind Lemon Jefferson. We also heard from Gus Cannon and his Jug Stompers with the Ripley Blues, Ripley, Tennessee, home of some fine Ripley tomatoes, I may add. Gus Cannon there on a little JSP box set of his fine music. All right, we got time for two last tracks. We're going to hear from Adam Tanner, who's a more contemporary blues player. But first, here's Son House from his 1965 sessions. This is Motherless Children, Son House, here on the Deep Blues Hour on WRCT, Pittsburgh.
79121, Motherless Children, take two.
Ain't no certain place most anywhere. Motherless children see the when they know they know. Don't wanna stumble, don't wanna fall when you just when you know.
Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we take a hard look at the role that the U.S. Postal Service plays during national elections, especially under a controversial postmaster chosen during the Trump administration. Will there be delays in mail-in ballots, potentially affecting the vote count in this very close election? We welcome back Chuck Zlatkin, legislative director of the New York Metro Area Postal Union, to talk to us about these crucial issues.
We'll also speak with two of the three authors of the new book, Abolition Labor, The Fight to End Prison Slavery.
We speak with Professor Andrew Ross and also a former incarcerated person, Ayuba Thomas, on this terrific book, The 13th Amendment, Abolish Slavery, But Not in Prison.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
I'm Stephen Rohde, retired civil rights lawyer and author on issues of civil liberties. Free elections can too easily turn into hollow formalities when coercion, manipulation, or biased governance replace voter choice and participation. The United States Postal Service has historically been one of the most trusted government institutions in the United States, with a strong reputation for reliability and nonpartisanship until now. Louis DeJoy, a prominent Trump donor and former logistics executive, was appointed by the U.S. Postal Service Board of Governors as Postmaster General in May 2020. Just months before the 2020 presidential election. That board has the sole authority to hire and fire the Postmaster General. DeJoy's tenure has been marked by a series of controversial reforms, including slowing mail delivery, removing mail sorting machines, reducing post office operating hours, and limiting overtime for postal workers. These changes have triggered widespread alarm given the heightened dependence on mail-in voting during the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite public outcry and congressional investigations, DeJoy continues to oversee an agency crucial to the functioning of our democracy. With the 2024 election on the horizon and the ongoing reliance on mail-in ballots, particularly in swing states, the stakes are very high. Voters in rural areas, the elderly, and people with disabilities often rely on it to cast their ballots. Any disruptions could disproportionately impact these communities and undermine public confidence in the electoral process. Today, we'll examine the potential impacts of delayed ballots, changes in USPS service standards, and the wider implications for voter turnout and trust in the system. Joining us again today to discuss these issues is Chuck Zlatkin, Legislative Director of the New York Metro Area Postal Union. Chuck, welcome back to Law and Disorder.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's indeed a privilege to be here.
Well, it's a privilege for us to have you. As Election Day fast approaches, Chuck, please remind our listeners what operational changes Louis DeJoy has implemented in the Postal Service since his appointment in 2020.
Well, DeJoy has what he calls consolidate, which is actually meant eliminating mail processing centers, trying to close post offices, eliminate using airplanes to move mail across the country, and a number of other aspects. But I have to make clear one thing, though. He doesn't function alone in the sense that he deals with the Postal Board of Governors, which you're correct, but there are also four unions that he has to deal with that also take very seriously our role in delivering the mail and specifically making sure that people receiving election mail, ballots, and voting by mail is given the highest priority.
It's very important that you added that. And for the sake of our listeners, you are a legislative director at your New York Postal Union. So what's the scope of your job and how has it interrelated with the reforms that DeJoy has implemented?
obviously dealing with representatives in Congress, the House and the Senate, and also local elected officials. Number one is really educating them to understand what is supposed to be going on, letting them know what DeJoy's proposals have been, have impacted on delivery of the mail. But also, you know, DeJoy has just a hard time for the unions. He actually doesn't have a very good relationship with elected officials, which in a sense made it easier to reach out to them and let them know. So we can help provide pressure on him when necessary by having the elected officials involved in this situation and dealing with him. But an election coming up, it's really a major function of the Postal Service. But I should also say it's something that's been going on for a long time. You know, they actually have some records of election mail back in the 18th century. And of course, it became really a part of the process during the Civil War, the election of 1864. You know, people were off to war, still wanted to vote, and that's when really vote by mail became a part of the everyday functioning since 1864.
Wow, that's actually so interesting. Many election officials are worried about these delays, and their warnings come as Donald Trump continues to sow distrust about how some of those ballots will be counted. How much concern should we have about the role of the postal system in that, and what is your assessment?
Okay, well, it's a couple of things. It's interesting because Postmaster General was appointed by Trump, and now he's being critical of him. In reality, you know, there are a lot of statistical analysis have gone on. Say, for example, the last general election in 2022, there was over 54 million ballots delivered and received and sent in during that election. And the statistics say that 98.96% of the ballots delivered from voters to elected officials in just 3 days, and on average completed ballots were delivered from voters to election officials in under 2 days. Now, there's a task force within the Postal Service to deal with elections, and the unions are part of it. They work with and really have insisted upon how we deal with election mail. And in a sense, maybe someone could say, well, I'm biased. But a lot of the pressure has really come from the unions on management to do what has to be done to make sure the ballots get through and on time. So there's the Election Mail Task Force, which is made up of management and the unions, which actually started in the 2020 election. It functions as a rapid response team, monitoring election mail. And if there's any problems anywhere along the line, they get involved to make sure that the problems are corrected right away. In a sense, I would say that, you know, people should always be concerned about what's being gone on and whatever, but there really is a tremendous effort done by the postal workers to get the mail through, ballots and whatever. I mean, specifically at a plant, they will sweep the plant, meaning that the election team will go through every day through the plant and look through every piece of material, every desk, every sorting facility within that plant to make sure there is not one piece of mail that's been left behind. They really scour the plant and make sure that the ballots and election mail go through. Of course, the union's position is that the Postal Service should be doing this all the time for all mail. That's how it should be prioritized. But in reality, this way of dealing with it is specifically around election mail and ballots. But it's really taken very seriously, and the effort is made to secure the mail, to make sure that it gets out as quickly as possible, that it gets to people, that the ballots are returned in time quickly and securely.
Well, that could be encouraging, but Could you explain how reduced sorting capacity and cutbacks in overtime for postal workers could affect the timely delivery of mail-in ballots during the 2024 election?
What DeJoy instituted, and to a certain extent still exists, but because of the pressure that's on him, the staffing will be increased. There will be overtime through the election season. Unfortunately, it should be that way all the time. From what my understanding is, from when I was talking to union officials dealing with management, that the effort for this election will be as strong as any previous election. So again, we have to watch it, be careful, see how it turns out, what the reality is. But at least from this point, you know, I don't know if it came from DeJoy himself, all the high-paid officials that now work for the post office that he brought in from his private companies that are there helping him run the show, or the fact that he has to deal with, you know, the union leadership. But at least from what we can gather is the effort will be made to make sure that that election mail gets out and the ballots are returned promptly and securely. So all we can do is do our best and monitor it, and hopefully that, you know, that he is succumbing to the pressure and will do it. But then again, with a character like DeJoy, you can't take anything for granted.
Well, there has been pressure, and it's coming from many different sources. In a letter to DeJoy last month, representatives from the National Association of Secretaries of State and the National Association of State Election Directors wrote that the failure to take immediate remedial measures will, quote, risk limiting voter participation and trust in the electoral process. So there has been that kind of pressure. Would you comment on that letter, and do you think it's having an impact?
No, I think the letter was very important. DeJoy is responding to pressure. This is not something that comes from him naturally. So yes, I think that's very important that the pressure is there. The fact is that, from what we understand, the commitment is there to have the special procedures during the election mail season to maintain the highest security and most efficient delivery of ballots. There's extra staff training, additional deliveries to election offices, and of course, as I mentioned earlier, the regular sweeps at every postal facility. So, yes, it's important that the elected officials puts pressure on DeJoy, and is being, you know, watched and monitored. So we're prepared, you know, as the union, as the postal employees, to do the job that's necessary to make sure that the mail gets through, you know, securely and efficiently. I think that the pressure is so intense now that DeJoy is not going to risk it, that he will have to follow through and do it what's necessary. And even if it doesn't come from his heart, it comes from his head.
Well, one reason we've invited you on is to keep up that pressure, and we're going to talk about that toward the end of the show. Now, there are communities that depend on the mail. How might changes in the Postal Service's standards, such as longer delivery times for first-class mail, disproportionately affect communities already facing barriers to voting, such as rural voters, elderly citizens, and people with disabilities?
If the pressure is put on and and the Postal Service does deal with those communities in terms of their election mail, well, what about the rest of their mail? What about the people who depend on checks, people who get medications through the mail, people who are, you know, small business owners who really need to mail to function? That's what we really want to do, is make sure that the effort that's going to be done for the election season is done all year round. It's because there are people who really depend upon the mail, as you mentioned, in rural areas, more so than anywhere else, but also, you know, veterans, people who are retirees, people who get medications. It's really still an essential service, even though, you know, people think, well, you know, with email and whatever, the Postal Service isn't as important as it once was. But to people who get their medications through the mail, and small business owners and retirees and veterans, the Postal Service is as important as it ever was, and therefore the pressure has to be there to make sure that, yes, during the election, it's taken seriously, the ballots get there, the election mail gets there, but what about the rest of the time when there are people who are depending upon, you know, if you have medication to keep you alive and it's going to be delayed an extra week, that's unacceptable. So we need to apply the pressure all the time to make sure that people get the mail service that they deserve.
I think that's an important lesson we're learning from you today. Maybe it's the wake-up call because a lot of attention's paid to the Postal Service during elections. But maybe all of our concerns today have to be spread across the years between elections. And I think that's a very important point you're making. But I do want to ask, in the 2020 election, several states experienced some issues with mail-in ballots arriving late or being disqualified due to delays. Have any lessons been learned from that experience, and any meaningful changes been made?
Well, yes. The problems that have gone on before have highlighted to people what needs to be done. That in certain states, it's when the mail-in ballot is postmarked that's important. So that's really become part of the procedure to make sure ballots are postmarked as soon as they're received, which may not be the natural way that mail has come. So that's become a priority to make sure that the mail is postmarked and sent through, that people are really prioritized about moving the mail and making sure that they're not, you know, left in a truck somewhere. And I don't think that's going to ever happen again, but, you know, anything's possible. But I think it really has become a top priority of the election committee within the post office, which isn't just management, but it's also made up of representatives of the four unions that are there to make sure this thing moves through. Because as you correctly said earlier in the broadcast about the Postal Service having the highest respect of the American people as of any of a public agency, but we can only keep that respect and have it grow if we do this job right. We have to make sure nothing that takes place during the election season that's a negative, and anything that we have to deal with, it's partly, you know, a service to the people, but it's also the reputation of the Postal Service at stake here to make sure everything is done the way it's supposed to be.
You're listening to Law and Disorder. My name is Stephen Rohde, and today we're talking with Chuck Zlatkin, the legislative director of the New York Metro Area Postal Union. Chuck, let's understand how DeJoy came to office. I want our audience to understand, we've said that the U.S. Postal Service Board of Governors hire and fires the Postmaster General, but you also said he was appointed by President Trump. So what's his status? Can he be removed by either the next president or by the Postal Board?
Okay, well, the Postal Board of Governors is the only one that can remove him. The Postmaster General has no specific term. Okay, they hired and fired at will, basically, by the Postal Board of Governors. Now, the Postal Board of Governors, when Trump was president, was when he was appointed. We were hopeful that when Biden was elected, he would appoint members to the Board of Governors who would move to get DeJoy out. But for whatever reason, and maybe you'll have to ask him someday, Biden did not fill those vacancies. He left them sit there for quite some time, which enabled DeJoy to stay in power. And there are still some vacancies there. So really what has to happen is we have to get those vacancies filled, get good people on there who are committed to a public postal service. It's not someone like DeJoy who has always been partial to privatizing the postal service. And we know full well that privatizing any of these agencies means worse service and higher prices. So we really have to put the pressure on and hope, if not before this election, following this election, we get in the type of people who should be serving on the Postal Board of Governors to make sure that the American people get the postal service that they deserve and then it stays healthy into the future. And that's going to be determined by who's nominated to the Postal Board of Governors, approved by the Senate, but it really is the Postal Board of Governors that, you know, hires and fires and even determines how much the Postmaster General makes. So, you know, I can't figure it out why, following the horrendous situation that we had with Trump's appointee of DeJoy in there, that with all the people in Congress who are upset with their mail service provided under DeJoy, because let's face it, most people, when they're upset with their mail, the people they call is either their congressional people or their senators, because they look at it as a federal agency. Therefore, they know what's going on. They get all the complaints. Why would not Biden move to put people in there to replace DeJoy? But maybe someday when Biden's on Law and Disorder, you can ask him.
Thank you, Chuck, for that. So let's talk about moving forward and what's happening and maybe what some of our listeners can do. What measures did the states put in place to counteract the potential delays in mail-in voting, such as drop boxes, et cetera? And were they enough of a safeguard for the vote coming up this November?
I think so. Of course, you know, there's always ways that people can, you know, if they don't want to mail in their ballot, they should have in certain places either voting centers or secure drop boxes where people can drop off ballots. But really, at this point, people just have to, you know, monitor their mail, see, you know, even the election mail, the mail that goes out during elections that, you know, candidates, you know, advertise themselves and mail things to your home, whatever. Be aware of that. Look at that and see if you're getting that election mail in time, because it doesn't do either candidates or the voting public any good if they receive the advertisements for the election candidates after the election has taken place. So monitor your own mail, make sure it's happening in time. And if you feel that it's not, you know, go directly to your local post office, complain to them and tell them, listen, I'm not getting this mail on time. I want to know what's being done about it and why it's happened. But maybe I'm being naive, but I'm actually somewhat confident that because of all the pressure, there'll be adequate staffing and hours open and all of that stuff to make sure that this, you know, mail goes through prior to the election, during the election, and following the election, getting the ballots counted. So, again, people at home, you know, you see what's going on. Don't hesitate if you feel it necessary to go to contact your local post office or call up your member of Congress, senator, House member, and file a complaint. But also, I think at this point, as I said, I might be naive. I actually think that this is going to be a pretty good election season because of the pressure like this program has done and other people have done and what the members of Congress have done and civic organizations have put the pressure on the Postal Service, that I think DeJoy has to make sure, because all we have to do is make sure that there's adequate staffing and the postal workers will make sure that the mail gets through and the ballots will be delivered on time.
Well, in that vein, Chuck, what's the role of the Postal Regulatory Commission, which oversees the post office operations? What's their job, and can they intervene if DeJoy's policies are found to undermine election integrity?
Actually, DeJoy has gone out after the Postal Regulatory Commission and feels like it's unnecessary and that they should be eliminated. So I don't know how much good feeling there is to DeJoy. But again, yes, he has to be responsible, and they have the power to deal with them. But again, it's the Board of Governors who are the ones who can, you know, hire and fire. So again, Postal Regulatory Commission is somebody, another agency that people can go to and to file complaints if necessary. But there's a lot of power that the Postmaster General has. There's an activist postal board of governors. That's really the ones who are there. But the Postal Regulatory Commission is there to make sure that you know, he follows the laws and makes sure that he's doing what he's supposed to do.
So how are grassroots organizations and voting rights advocates preparing for any potential disruptions in the 2024 election? Can individual voters do anything to ensure that their ballots are counted?
Making sure that you receive your ballot on time is important, and to act upon that. And even though there's time, the sooner you get in your ballot, the better it is. And in terms of the counting of the ballots, that's once the Postal Service delivers the ballots, I guess it's the local election committees are the ones who actually count the ballots. But making sure you get your ballot on time, getting in as quickly as possible, and making sure that your elected officials understand from you that it's important, because again, without hearing from the public, they don't know how important it is as an issue to the public. So, you know, contacting your elected officials and let them know that you're concerned that you mailed in your ballot, you want to make sure that it's received on time and counted, can only be helpful.
You know, Chuck, it's been so important to have you on the program. Law and Disorder has been examining American institutions that have been undermined during the Trump administration, and now with Project 2025, the kinds of threats that the conservative movement is making to a whole range of institutions in American life. And sometimes we don't think enough about those institutions, including the Postal Service. Today, you've really illuminated how important it is, and frankly, throughout the year, between elections, to getting our information, to be able to communicate with each other, despite the use of social media and internet and email and all the rest. It's been very elucidating for me, and I think our listeners. How can folks stay abreast of these issues regarding your union, DeJoy, and the Postal Service?
Well, you can go to apwu.org. That's the National Union's website. You can also go to New York Metro Area Postal Union a website. And then just to stay abreast of what's happening as you get the news reported to you, if there's anything that involves having to do with election ballots or whatever, you know, make sure that they're speaking to the Postal Service too. And if they need any help in any area, they can contact the unions. My union, APWU.org, is a place to go, because we feel that, you know, we're committed to the public, and we're there to make sure that the public is represented as they need to be, and also their mail is received and delivered on time.
Chuck, we're grateful to you today, but we're really grateful to you every day that you wake up, that you're doing this work as the legislative director of your union. It's very important, and maybe people and even elected officials will have a better understanding of the role that unions play in our deliberative process as a source of advocacy, as a source of oversight. The degree to which unions have been trashed in recent years, you are an example of the importance of unions and the role they play in our democracy.
Well, thank you for that. And to a lot of American people, during COVID, the only representative of the government they saw during that time was the person who worked for the post office.
Chuck, we're grateful again to have you on Law and Disorder. Be well and be safe.
Thank you. And anytime you want me back in the future, just let me know. Thank you.
Visit us online at lawanddisorder.org for archived programs and links to many of the issues we discuss. That's lawanddisorder.org. Operating in the secrecy of the nation's more than 1,800 prisons, for decades, a kind of shadow slave culture has been fostered. Few Americans are aware of the exploitative and pervasive practice of forced prison labor. The 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution abolished slavery, but it made one exception, prison labor. Prisoners are forced to work with minimal or non-existent wages, and often with no labor protections. Understanding the scope and implications of forced prison labor is crucial for anyone concerned with social justice and equality. It calls for a re-examination of our treatment of incarcerated persons and for alternatives that promote fairness for everyone, regardless of their legal status. By shining a light on this issue, we can advocate for reforms that prioritize rehabilitation over punishment and strive toward a more just and humane criminal justice.